Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. We'd like to better understand who is listening and how you are using podcasts. Please help us out. Complete a short anonymous survey at npr.org/podcast survey. One word, podcast survey. It takes less than 10 minutes. It will really help to support the show. Again, npr.org/podcast survey. When a popular book becomes a television series, the stakes are high. Sally Rooney's novel Normal People is no exception, and the very good Hulu adaptation has finally arrived. The new series tells the story of Marianne and Connell, who go to high school together in Ireland.
We follow the couple for a few years as they drift toward adulthood, sometimes apart and sometimes together. And while the show features other characters, like their mothers and friends, it's mostly a study of Marianne and Connell and how their relationship shifts. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about the new Hulu series Normal People on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Also with us from her home studio is Katie Pressley. Hi, Katie.
Howdy.
It is a joy to have you with us always. And if you're not super familiar with Normal People, the Sally Rooney novel is mostly made up of the kind of inner monologues and thoughts of these two characters. They have aired it on BBC Three, but also now there are 12 mostly half-hour episodes available on Hulu. Glenn, what did you think?
Well, I'm really glad I stuck with this, because along the way, there were several moments where I thought I wasn't gonna. I mean, the usual caveats, because this is me talking, it takes a lot for me to get invested in this kind of heterosexual hand-wringing. 6 hours is a long time. One character wants to be a writer. That's a red flag for me. There's a high school setting in the beginning. And listen, if you're not Heathers, bring it on or be more chill. Keep walking. The broad outlines of this relationship, like if I just read the jacket copy, she's smart. She's sassy, but vulnerable. She's the outsider whom nobody gets, which in terms of winning your audience's sympathy, it's so effective, it feels like cheating. And he is this popular, sweet, but self-conscious jock. That also feels very familiar. And because of that, I was worried that this would have a YA feel. And, you know, I'm not one of those people who doesn't think that adults should read YA. I just think I shouldn't, and I'm saying that as a guy who reads superhero comics at age 52. I did watch it. Did I check my phone through the lingering silences, of which there were, let's agree, a tremendous lot? Yeah, I did. I kept getting drawn back in for two reasons. One, as many people, including the great and good Linda Holmes, have pointed out, the sex scenes are used here to advance the plot and to delineate these characters at the same time. We never pan away to the gently wafting curtains as we would in an American show, because these sex scenes are saying more than they have sex. They're showing us where these two characters are emotionally, and they mirror the shifting power imbalances between them, or maybe they instigate them in some cases. So we stay on them, and they stay on each other. And I also was grateful that this show did not insult my intelligence to have me believe that women have sex with bras on, which, my experience is not vast, I'll put it that way, but I know that is not a thing. The other reason I kept coming back is these two are going to be huge stars of the first magnitude, because so much of this takes place in extreme close-up. It takes the character of Connell 4 episodes to say more than 3 lines in a row, and it is such a high-wire act to have a protagonist who is so laconic slash inarticulate when we don't have access to his inner thoughts like we would in the book. And then, in the back half of the show, he gets this actual, what I would call a monologue, a hugely emotional one, and he knocks it out of the park. So, liked, didn't love.
And we should say the performances that you are lauding from the leads are Daisy Edgar Jones, who plays Marianne, and mm-hmm. Paul Mescal, who plays Connell. And it's really interesting that you say, like, she's sort of sassy and whatever, and because I didn't see them as high school types at all. I thought the interesting thing about it was that they have kind of this crossed status relationship, because on the one hand, his social status in high school is higher than hers because he has a lot of friends. But at the same time, his mother works as a house cleaner for her mother. So through the time that they know each other, you kind of see the power in the relationship shift around a few times. Katie, you undoubtedly are familiar with the book, I think.
I brought it up as a happy on this show.
What did you think of the Hulu adaptation?
I loved it. I believe I loved it more than I loved the book, which you'll never hear me say, but you just did, so never say never. I find both of Sally Rooney's books, Normal People and Conversations with Friends, she keeps a real distance. And it's one of the things that makes her such an interesting writer is she writes books that seem so effortless. I described reading Normal People as like being in a trance. You know, I like looked down at the book and looked up when I was done. And you could have broken a window next to me and I wouldn't have known. So there is something deeply compelling about them, but she really keeps you at arm's length, and you can't do that on screen. You are filming bodies. It's going to be more visceral. And that really worked for me. One of the ways I might describe it is like, if you want to think about thoughts, read the book. If you want to feel feelings, watch this show. I really appreciated those extreme close-ups because they do what I think the internal monologues do, but they do it in a way that reads to me better. I want extreme close-ups. I want to watch eyelids fluttering. I don't know if I want my kissing so heavily mic'd, but I do I do appreciate the physical connection is one of the main ways that we learn about the relationship between these people, especially once they're out of their high school orbit and sort of living their larger lives. The show wants you to ask over and over again, why do they keep coming back to each other, and or why were they ever apart? And the ways that they are intimate together, not just, it's kind of all sexual, but not always explicitly sexual. The ways they are intimate together reveal a lot. And I also do want to say about the high school thing that I, like, LOL at the basic premise that someone as beautiful as Marianne is, yeah, with a mostly empty house who sasses teachers, is a pariah. I don't think so. Yeah. She would be, yeah, a hero.
Yeah. Then they sort of talk about the fact that she's ordinary looking and everything. But I will say, I do think that in some people's young experiences, your sense of whether you're good looking can be so important that there are people that I think you would look back and say, like, why did people think of this as like a plain sort of person, mm-hmm, when they weren't? But I think in this case, there's also a little bit of televisionitis involved in the fact that she's very, very beautiful. And yet the conversations they have early on allow the possibility that she is not. I also, you know, I appreciated the way they shot the sex scenes as well, because I think especially when they are really young, when they're first kind of involved with each other, when they're still in high school, a lot of their relationship is sex, or a lot of the part of the relationship that they're able to admit they're having is the part that is sex. And I think the emotional driver of maybe the first like third of the series is the wound of him having wanted it to be a secret that they were involved with each other when they were in high school, and the fact that he didn't want anyone to find out. And she sort of acts like that's okay. But it's, of course it's not okay. That's terrible. It's monstrous to make it clear that you wouldn't want your friends to know that you were sleeping with someone, but you want to sleep with her. I think in order to understand the nature of that relationship when they're young, you have to be candid about the fact that the time when they are able to connect with each other is when they're having sex. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the rest of the time, they find that much more difficult. But then as they get older, one of the things that I admired about it was, it's like, not to be too like explicit about talking about it, but like the kind of sex they're having is different when they're older than it was when they were in high school, which makes a lot of sense. But it's not an element of relationships that you often get to see. And one of the things I pointed out when I reviewed this is that ironically, a lot of times when they're trying to make sex scenes less explicit, what they do is they make them more generic. And so you get kind of every sex scene having the same series of shots, because there's only certain things that you can show. So they show those things kind of in order. In this show, because they're more kind of like, well, it's a streaming series, they can kind of do whatever they want. And it was, you know, made with the BBC, so it has a European production influence. You get a different attitude towards sex scenes. And so because they're more specific and graphic, in some ways they're more respectful, because they feel more specific to this story.
Yeah, I agree that the sex is really smartly handled, except in one very specific area. There's a bit of kink shaming in here, is there not? There is such psychological nuance and emotional depth in the show's treatment of sex and relationships, except where it draws a line between being into BDSM and being damaged, or in the case of one character, just evil. And that felt really forced, and like it was being used as a shorthand for something in a way that felt really parochial and normy and boring. I mean, people are into BDSM because they find it fun, and maintaining, as this show does, that it's inherently unhealthy is just, you know, okay, Gramps.
I will say I read an interview with Daisy Edgar Jones about how she read that and that she and the director decided that every BDSM interaction that she has is consensual.
No, sure.
And I actually found watching it that that didn't read to me. So I will say that watching it, I was thinking, like psychologically analyzing her, I think that she needs to dig into why she's into this a little bit more, because it might be what I'm seeing is that she might be kind of dealing with other abuse in her life through sex, which is not a healthy thing to put, like, shame to put
right.
on sex.
That's the only reading I came away from, yeah.
Right. I agree with Glenn. I think at best the lines are very blurry between, you know, is the fact that she's into this something that indicates that something is amiss with her, or is the fact that she feels like she has to act like she's into this mm-hmm. something that indicates that something's amiss with her. Mm-hmm. Those are very different, but subtly different in some ways if you're only watching a TV show as opposed to getting the full internal monologue. But I think throughout, including in these scenes of very close and quiet conversation, I really admired the way that they used the camera to indicate a lot about what kind of a conversation you're watching. There's a big difference between the conversations where they're shot kind of at pleasant angles where they feel in conversation with each other versus there are a couple where they do a less extreme version of the Mr. Robot thing where the person's face will be over toward the edge of the screen, which mm-hmm. makes them look isolated. I think that's part of what they're doing here to try to compensate for all of that lost internal monologue.
I was confused at one point why they broke up, and all you have to do is watch the show a little bit more, and it turns out that they're confused about that too. And so I really liked that the show addressed that, because this is it, right? Miscommunication is the thing that destroys relationships, but it's really tough to depict believably because, you know, the audience is just asking, okay, why don't you talk to each other? Because we've all read books and seen movies and television where the conflict would dissolve immediately and the whole thing would be over if just character A talked to character B.
30 seconds of conversation, yep.
That's all it takes. But if the writers throw in all these sweaty convolutions and impediments to keep that from happening, but you don't need to do that. And this is what this show shows. Like, all you need to do is show that they're afraid to talk to one another, and all of that mishigas is believable all of a sudden.
And I really liked the fact that, like, sometimes it's more that she's anxious about having those conversations. Sometimes it's more that he is.
Yeah, I totally agree. It goes back and forth between who is the better communicator, but both of them badly miscommunicate. And for characters that we are told over and demonstrate over and over again how intelligent they are, it feels correct that both of them misstep and that both of them know they're smart, and that also gets them into trouble. That was very believable to me.
Yeah. Katie, did the music in this piece remind you at all of the kind of sad, moody, people singing in soft voices stuff that Steven listens to a lot of? Because it did me.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, the music is a gut punch. And I think it really does walk the line of how many feels is too many feels. but to me, that the other side of that line does not exist. So, you know, yeah. The limit does not exist. A single episode features Nick Drake, Elliot Smith, and Hide and Seek by Imogen Heap. So, like, if hearing that hurts you, then beware.
Yeah.
But it really worked for me. It worked for me in the same way that the Garden State soundtrack worked for me, which is basically a director saying the limit does not exist. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the most emotionally dense time in these people's lives. Full tilt boogie. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Katie, do you have anything else you want to add before we go?
Another thing that I really loved about the way that intimacy worked is that the show actually hired an intimacy coordinator. She was crucial to the direction of particularly the sex scenes, but just a lot of the physical work between Connell and Marianne. Her name's Ida O'Brien, and she started this intimacy coordination business in the wake of the Weinstein allegations in order to sort of codify the ways that actors can be kept safe in intimate and particularly sexual scenes. So I really think that hiring her has to be given credit for why these sex scenes really work. It means that the director and the actors and the writers, it means that across the board, everybody took seriously these scenes as narrative devices, but also had the safety of the actors first and foremost, which means they were maximally comfortable. These are young actors. They're in their early 20s. What an excellent bar to set early in their career that this is how you can do really revealing, pretty graphic sexual work, but be completely safe and protected by everyone around you on the set.
Yeah, for sure. I loved it too. I think it's well worth a watch. It is very moody and lovely for maybe a rainy weekend. Let us know what you think of Normal People if you've had a chance to watch it. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week. And every week, what's making us happy this week? So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Purple Mattress. The secret to Purple is the Purple Grid. It's a patented comfort technology designed to instantly adapt to your body's natural shape and sleep style. With over 2,800 open air channels and naturally temperature neutral gel, every Purple Mattress comes with free shipping, returns, and a risk-free 100-night trial. Visit purple.com/happyhour and use promo code happyhour for a special offer. Terms apply. This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp, a truly affordable online counseling service. Fill out a questionnaire online and get matched with a licensed counselor best suited to your mental health needs. Whether it's depression, anxiety, or trauma, BetterHelp will help you overcome what stands in the way of your happiness. Learn more at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month with promo code HAPPYHOUR. BetterHelp. Get help anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
The comedian Cole Escola has been doing a live one-man sketch show for a few years called Help, I'm Stuck. And he just uploaded a new version, an all-quarantine version of the show, filmed in his apartment, to YouTube. And it is a much-needed balm. Different characters, different wigs, all of them hilarious, except for this extended Tennessee Williams pastiche in the middle of it, which is played very straight, and he totally commits to it, which makes it all the funnier. It's so weird, so silly, so strange, so good. That's Cole Escola, Help, I'm Stuck. And while you're at it, check out the Barbara Collins story, which he stars in the titular role, an aging star in old Hollywood who's a terrible, terrible person. It was written and directed by his one-time comedy partner, Jeffrey Self. Self put it together during quarantine with a cast of very many funny people all acting from their kitchens and bedrooms because that's the new normal. So two things, Cole Escola's Help, I'm Stuck and the Barbara Collins story, both on YouTube.
All right. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Katie Presley, what is making you happy this week?
Cookbooks that meet me where I'm at are making me happy this week. I'm finding that I infuriatingly am one of those people that's like trying to learn Chinese and do a sourdough starter and knit a blanket during quarantine. Sorry, I hate myself more than you could ever hate me. but I do have more time to cook and I'm enjoying it as long as what I'm trying to cook understands that I am a mortal, a mortal that has canned beans and old cottage cheese in my home at any given time. I have finally had the chance to go through these bajillion cookbooks. I've been moving across the country for 15 years now, and two have really risen to the top as what I will reach for when I have 30 minutes to cook and said cottage cheese and beans. Those are Smitten Kitchen by Deb Perlman and anything by the pioneer woman, Ree Drummond. I would be remiss if I didn't say that the Pioneer Woman has gender politics that I'm not crazy about. So, like, maybe don't read the paragraphs, just cook the cheesy enchiladas. but Deb Perlman, oh my God, be my best friend when we get out of this. Everything she cooks is unfussy and fairly easy. And she's a great example of the type of cook who has done all the work for you. You know, she has tested 25 kinds of flour and come to the conclusion that the cheapest one that you definitely have on your shelf is the correct one. She's so funny and so forgiving and really believes that you can make beautiful, excellent food that can please a family in 30 minutes. And I love her for it because that's where I'm at.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Katie Presley. So I am so happy that you talked about cooking because I also want to talk about cooking. And I think it is so important to have a varied cooking experience because you are talking about the value of this is what I have. I have a 30-minute cooking experience. And what I want to talk about is the gazillion hour super involved project cooking experience, mm-hmm. which is what I had this week. As some of you probably know, through the New York Times cooking app and some of their other outlets, they had a project with the wonderful Samin Nosrat, who wrote the book and did the Netflix series Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. She had a big thing for everybody to cook lasagna this last weekend. Mm-hmm. So she had a big recipe. Then she had an Instagram live thing at 7 o'clock on Sunday night where people could like ask her questions, and theoretically everybody was eating their own lasagna, although it was such an involved process that I think a lot of people were eating their lasagna at like 2 a.m. based on what I heard later. But I dove in with both feet. I made everything. I made the noodles myself. I made everything myself. What I felt like was, not only would I not do this every day, I wouldn't do this every weekend. I wouldn't do this ever, but I do think it's important to keep your eye on what can I do so that I'm doing things. Like, and that's not from a productivity standpoint. It's from a, you don't want it to be that like either I'm at work or nothing is happening, mm-hmm. which if you live alone like I do, can happen to you. I was incredibly happy that I got to do it, and really do agree that it's good to find both the 30-minute thing that's super easy for when you just want something delicious to eat, and the part of it where it's like, today maybe I want to do a project. So I think the full range of project to quick cooking is what is making me happy this week. Katie and I did not coordinate in advance.
Though I did eat the lasagna.
It's true. I did. I shared a little bit of the lasagna with Katie's household. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes, Glenn at G.H. Weldon, and Katie at Love is Maroon. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you're bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, go over and subscribe to our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. Another reminder to take the podcast survey. That's at npr.org/podcast survey. And we will see you all next week, where we will be talking about the new Netflix series from Mindy Kaling, Never Have I Ever.
The biggest story in the world is a science story. And keeping up with all the latest coronavirus research, it's a lot. So on Shortwave, we translate the science you need to know into short daily episodes. Listen and subscribe to Shortwave from NPR.